In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
Hey, everybody, I'm with the... We're actually at the San Diego Comic-Con. Now, the other San Diego Comic-Con podcasts were done in a safe, undisclosed location, not on the Comic-Con floor. And we'll find out just how good the Comic-Con security is if someone shows up during said, sorry, no podcasting. No second chairs, no podcasting. No, they're not going to say that. That's insane. Anyway, I'm here at the booth of Benton Jew. How long have we known each other?
Gosh, I think probably since the mid-90s, maybe?
Yeah, and we met here, right? We met at the Comic-Con?
I think so. I mean, obviously, I'd seen you on, I think, the first movie I saw you, seeing you on the Incredibly Strange Film Show,
right.
Interviewing one of my heroes, Jackie Chan, and finding out more about it. We were just talking before about how, I've been a fan of martial arts films since 1971.
Oh, baby.
But, and then I became a fan of Jackie Chan in 1979, but it wasn't until I saw Rick on the Incredibly Strange...
So actually, the son of the Incredibly Strange Film Show,
yeah. Who actually found out anything about Jackie Chan, because he'd been this mystery guy who I'd only seen... I guess I'd seen him in... I saw him when... Big Brawl came out.
Battle Creek Brawl, yeah.
And then I saw him when
Cannonball Run.
Yeah. And then I would see him on TV for Young Master would come on TV every once in a while.
You're lucky.
Yeah.
We'd only get Battle Creek Brawl, you know, or Big Brawl.
Big Brawl, I guess.
Here.
Things like that. But you'd see him, but we didn't know anything about him until Rick.
Well.
Helped give us the background story.
I was super lucky, I think the listeners may know the story already, but just in case, when I was just back from the Superman set with the Christopher Reeve Superman, and I was at Larry Hama's office at Marvel,
mm-hmm.
and I was complaining bitterly that they always somehow managed to put something campy in superhero movies.
Right.
And Larry brought me immediately down to see Baby Cart in the Land of Demons, and then immediately thereafter, mm-hmm. Drunken Monkey in a Tiger's Eye,
right.
In New York's Chinatown.
Yeah.
And I realized, and by then I had written a book on science fiction films and fantasy films, so I went to my publisher and said, I want to do a book on these things. And they went, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing was very good. And within months, I was in Hong Kong, having been set by a distributor and a television station that was trying to educate the American public.
Yeah.
And one of the very first things that happened was that I was at Golden Harvest. They brought me to Jackie Chan's office. Jackie Chan was having an argument with one of his producers, and they say, here's Wilo, but they did say, here's a kid from America. And he turns to me and says, who should direct me in my next American picture? And having seen Snake and Eagle Shadow, Beatles Hyena, and all the others, and Drunken Master, I said, nobody directs you better than you. And he grabbed me, brought me into Raymond Chow's office,
yeah.
And pointed and said, tell him that.
Wow.
And at that point, I had also done a book called The World of Exploitation Films, for 1 week only, The World of Exploitation Films. And Jonathan Ross got in touch with me. Because there was a female research assistant at Jonathan Ross's company who was not going to rest until she found someone who had a more equal slant toward horror movies than most people. Because those were all about killing women. And he wanted, so she saw my book and read my book for 1 week only, and I have this attitude that there was a difference between debasing a character and dehumanizing a character. And she said, I will quit if you don't get this guy on your show. And that was the original Incredibly Strange Film Show. And they brought me in for the Herschel Gordon Lewis episode, and much to my amazement, because they knew I lived in Connecticut, they brought me in on the George Romero episode.
Oh, awesome.
So I came out to Pittsburgh and spent 4 days with George Romero at his prime. And then Jonathan and I became friends, and the whole crew except for the director. The director hated me. And I started sending him shit. I said, you should do something on this guy. And it was Jack. And he only knew Battle Creek Brawl and Big Brawl and the Cannonball Run. So I sent him all the good ones. And he said, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And that, the whole idea was to redefine Jackie as himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you saw him on the Mike Douglas show and all that stuff,
right,
you were still trying to make him Bruce Lee.
Right, exactly. And although I remember those interviews, he still sort of said, he's still kind of going through a line where you could get hints of where it's going to go before. You would always talk about, Bruce Lee, punch high, I kick low.
Right.
He makes sound like this.
He's still saying that.
He's still saying that. But those, I remember those as far back as the John Davidson show, or you asked for it, or the Mike Douglas show. And it was just, great seeing Jackie.
Go ahead.
No, it was Jackie was. That was my train of thought. But Jackie was, moving towards the direction of showing what he could do.
Right.
As opposed to being a clone of Bruce Lee.
And he was so awesome. It was a Daredevil movie come to life. I was so happy when Jonathan and the rest of the guys made that thing. And that really changed his career, and off we were going. And then also, of course, I did the Kung Fu Extravaganza here starting 20 years ago. And did I meet you at... Now, you were at ILM at that time?
I was working at ILM, yes. And... I think I met you at the convention. I was just really excited to meet a fellow person who works, same type of...
Hello! totally forgot to come back yesterday. I need that.
So you were at Industrial Light and Magic. What were you doing at Industrial Light and Magic?
I was a visual effects art director, so I basically come up with a lot of the illustrations and storyboards and concept work for a lot of films and commercials and such. I was also the storyboard artist on Phantom Menace while I was over there.
Wow. Why did you leave?
They started shrinking down the company a little bit, so I ended up, it was a good time for me to move to Los Angeles and get more work instead of just doing visual effects. I could do other kinds of movies as well, so it was broadening my horizon.
Well, that's awesome, but you were still... Now, my big question was, I saw Bruce Lee, I saw Five Fingers of Death, and that was in 72, 73. You said you started watching in 71.
Yes. And it's funny, because as I'm a little kid in first grade, and then your folks want to go see a movie, and they're trying to convince us to go with them, and they're saying, oh yeah, you do want to go see a Chinese Western? And we're like, Chinese Western? This is how they would describe a wuxia film.
Right.
It's like, because they're on horses, and it's basically, that's the equivalent for martial arts films.
It's they're sword slingers. Yeah.
And or they would say, do you want to see the Chinese Superman? Chinese Superman. And so they take us in, it's a Bruce Lee movie. So, they would play we might be in San Francisco and we would see them in a Chinese movie theater where they would be blaring out the entire sound of the entire movie out of speakers out on the side of the street, and you just walk in, you get your Vita Soy and your cuttlefish. But or locally in Sacramento they would screen some Chinese films at some of the art house theaters.
Yeah.
Not art house, but the cheap ones.
Second run movies. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They would play them sometimes, and sometimes there would be the Chinese versions of them, and then sometimes it would be the American versions. So, because I remember seeing you know, a lot of Bruce Lee films before they, you know, before they were the Americanized version, they were under different names.
The real name.
Big Boss was
Mr. Fury.
Mr. Fury. So we thought it was just Mr. Fury.
And Chinese Connection was obviously the original title for The Big Boss, because that was about drug pushing. But they switched them because they didn't know it.
It's kind of confusing. Even like in the Wuxia films, it's like I remember we were seeing New One-Armed Swordsman, but in the United States they called it Triple Irons.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, so that's how my brain got warped. Because the first grade I'm watching Triple Irons and people getting split in half and stuff like that. So.
And you saw the uncut ones.
Yes. It's funny because I remember as a little kid seeing the uncut versions of, for example, the Bruce Lee films. It was like, wasn't there a nude scene or something
that's
like
right.
that? And then when I see the American scene, the nude scene's gone, or the scene with them breaking the guy in the face is gone. All kinds of little things. It's like, did they dream that, or is it, you know, then you see later, oh, it's a different thing, a different cut.
Now, did you ever see, because I also saw everything in Chinatown, and there was the Fong Sai-yuk movie starring Fu Shen. And at the end of the film, he gets the sword all the way up his rectum.
I didn't see that one.
All right. Well, the screen goes red, and they cut.
Right.
And then there's the brilliant shot of him going backwards into the pool with the sword between his legs. And I've always wondered whether that was done for American consumption or there was an uncut version in Asia or in Chinatown. But the search will continue.
Yeah.
What was the very first? Do you remember the very first one you saw?
I honestly don't remember because I saw so many. But definitely, you know, New One-Armed Swordsman was one of the big ones. But I do remember, even then thinking about it, I came into it already being a big David Chang fan. Because I remember, what was the one where he played the Rover?
Oh, the Rover, that's awesome. I don't think that's Vengeance, but that was the one where he had sort of like
there's a couple of films,
haircut.
Like Vengeance, and he's coughing all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. He's James Dean. I will find the title. I know it. It's in my book.
Yeah.
I can't call it, but we have a thing on my site where I do a supplemental for each episode, and that's where I put in all the information I forgot or got wrong. So we'll put it in there.
Right. So, David Chang, we were big fans of back then. And of course, he's always in there with Tee Lung. And the first Kung Fu movie I've ever seen, I don't know. I saw so many. There's actually a few that I vaguely have in my memory. Like, I remember seeing in Chinese schools. There's a couple that I saw that, like, I've never seen anywhere else that are the description of them. I know the description of them, but I don't remember ever seeing them anywhere.
Huh.
Like, there's one with a guy, where this guy, villain, would whip people with his cue.
Yes.
Now, I finally did see a film fairly recently that did have a guy who whipped people with his cue, but it was not the same one. This one, he was very prominently displayed, and they were in a war on the mainland where they were wearing World War II clothing.
Yeah.
So it was not part of it was there was another one though that had a minor character who had a whip. I don't remember that one.
Seven Man Army?
No.
Well, I know because
it might be a different name.
I know what you're talking about. The one I remember most recently was one of the Once Upon a Time in China movies where the bad teacher had not only would whip people with his cue, but would have a little blade in his cue. And Jet Li wound up wrapping the cue and cutting the guy's cue with his own blade.
This one they yanked his cue off his head, and there's blood on the root part of it.
It's a Chang Chae movie.
Yeah, it has to be.
Let me ask you, even as a kid, could you distinguish the difference between a Chang Chae movie, a Lok Kar Yung movie, Sun Chung, and Chor Yun? Because the Wuxia's were all Chua.
I was in first grade, so idea of directing styles was lost on me at that time. So a lot of that stuff was stuff, my familiarity with a lot of stuff kind of going back to my childhood and looking at films that I saw as a kid as an adult again. And they usually come out very differently.
Yeah.
You have a different perception of them as a child as than as you do as an adult.
So did you remember Fate? Well, you love Dave Chang, so that's Chang Cheng.
Yeah.
Chang Cheng directed. But did you also see the Gordon Liu movies and the strict Kung Fu?
The Gordon Liu movies I saw later at like Kung Fu Theater when we were like more like a teenager then, and we'd see Master Killers, what they called it.
Right.
And that,
America,
the
World North called it then.
So, but we're obviously big fans of Gordon Liu.
Yeah.
And so that's, he's kind of like what we see during the disco era, I guess.
Yeah. When, did that stuff make you interested in working in the film industry or being in the art industry?
You know, I think when we were kids, we would draw these comic books, and they were Kung Fu comics, because also you had Master of Kung Fu and Iron Fist, and so my brother came up with them called Chinese Incorporated, and then I had one of my own, the Phoenix and whatever.
The Phoenix?
Yes, the Phoenix. So anyway, so these things we did in like fifth grade or something like that. We're drawing comics of that, but a lot of it was based... Yeah, based in movies that we saw. In fact, I remember my brother. He had a character named Crazy Dragon, and he got that one from a movie. Do you remember which one is? But there's a line in it that we always remember. It's like, back in China, they called me Hungry Tiger. Back in China, they called me Crazy Dragon. And so he took the name from that. Do you know what film that is?
No, it sounds like Sambo, though.
But I saw a clip. I saw that clip somewhere, but I don't recall the name of it.
Now, did you see it dubbed, or was that the subtitle?
We saw it the first time. It was in China.
It wasn't Chinese.
But it was subtitles.
I mean, I've always loved... I never understood Quentin Tarantino and other people at first when they would do satires of beloved Kung Fu films and make them look awful.
Right.
Because we saw them originally in movie theaters,
right,
full widescreen.
Right.
Maybe not the newest print, but not the oldest print.
Right, right.
With subtitles, widescreen.
Yes,
so when they,
or sometimes the subtitles. Actually,
no, that's right.
Sometimes
you didn't,
they didn't even have that.
Yeah.
But the storytelling was strong enough on some of them. Not all of them, where you can, or at least you use your own imagination to sort of fill in the blanks and make what you kind of can guess what's going on.
Yeah, and also you were in the golden age. Oh, yeah. One of my great before I go back to that question, I remember one of my great.
Are you guys selling poster covers by any chance?
One of my greatest experiences was seeing a Kung Fu movie in France.
Wow.
On the Pigalle, and it was dubbed in French. It was, what was it? It was versus, it was contra, it was the Phoenix Rouge contra Le Dragon Blanc.
Uh-huh.
So it was the Red Phoenix versus the White Dragon.
Uh-huh.
And it was awesome to see in French. French make everything better. But anyway, jumping back to the point, you were growing up in the golden age of the independent Kung Fu movie because of the success of Jackie and Sammo. People like Billy Chong would be able to do a whole series of movies. And in New York's Chinatown, they had a mainland Chinese place, a Golden Harvest place, a Shaw Brothers place, and they also had a seasonal theater where they showed all the independent stuff. So,
I don't know how they separated it in San Francisco Chinatown. There were several theaters, and usually when I would go, it'd be like the Red Star or whatever. I think that was the one that tended to. Later they tended to open Jackie Chan's films, but there was a lot of them there. But I don't really know if they were affiliated with anything
specifically. Else. Were you also loving non-Asian film at that time?
Oh, of course. No, I've always been a film fanatic.
All right, but you remember what started that love? When were some of your first film experiences outside of Chinatown?
Film experiences outside of Chinatown. Oh,
was it on TV, maybe? Mostly on TV?
Yeah, we would see lots of films on TV. I don't know.
Well, I see you have on the table here, I see Two Kong right away.
Yes, King Kong was my age, I grew up with Star Wars, so that sort of like...
That will do it.
Started our love of visual effects and all things kind of sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Yeah. So in 1977, you know, we're in the seventh grade, and as soon as we see that, and we're picking up Cine Fantastique, things like that, and seeing how they make these things, like, suddenly we're begging for a Super 8 camera and getting out the Play-Doh or whatever it is, and we're making our own little things at home, seeing if we can do it. So that, you know, that sort of like fed our interest in filmmaking, but also we had already been doing drawing and doing comic books, so the fact that I work as a storyboard artist now sort of marries the two together, because basically storyboards is basically just doing comics,
yeah,
really. So, yeah, but we're still storytelling.
Right.
So it's a lot, using a lot of the same muscles.
Did you read manga and manhwa as a kid?
Yes. Actually, we visited Taiwan and Hong Kong in 1973.
Awesome.
And so we were looking at Tony Wong's old comics.
Oh, yeah.
This is when they were, like, really, really gory. We love those. I still love those. And then we also had the Bruce Lee comics. They had the Young Rascals, and they had the Bruce Lee comics.
Right.
I wish they had a collection. They did reprint a bunch of the old, you know, Young Rascals ones and Jackie Tucker Gate stuff.
Yeah.
But they've never reprinted the, to my knowledge, the Bruce Lee ones, the Lacey Loom ones.
Yeah.
But those are awesome, too. So, yeah, we would look at manhwa, we would look at manga, we would see, you know, because there was a little Japanese gift store fairly close to our house, and it would have, like, you know, the little bunk of buns of Ultraman.
Right.
And so we would look at those and love the artwork in that. And so, yeah, we grew up in a lot of cultural stuff.
You know, I'm sorry to digress with some of my own stories, but there's very few people I could tell these stories to who would appreciate the importance of them in my life, at any rate. I'm lots of name dropping here. I'm at Jackie Chan's restaurant, the Fisherman's Wharf, on the Hong Kong side. What happens with he has his own room called the Dragon Room, mm-hmm, where he holds court. And what happens is whenever he does a meal, people come in all during the meal, and the meal lasts hours and hours and many, many, many courses. But anybody who's anybody in Hong Kong will come in and kowtow to Jackie, will bow to Big Brother.
Sure.
And so I'm just kind of like, my eyes are getting bigger and bigger. It's really amazing, all these guys. I mean, that was the first time I met Stephen Fung and Daniel Wu. And they said, sit next to the bearded guy, because Daniel Wu didn't know any Chinese.
Yeah.
You know, from Canada. So we were talking, and then suddenly I'm talking to Daniel Wu, and suddenly I do a double take. It's Tony Wong.
Wow.
Tony Wong walks in.
Well.
And I'm like, oh my God, because I started in comic books.
Yeah.
You know, you and I worked on a project together under the Jeff Robbins aegis, the Culinary Comics. Matter of fact, I brought you in on it. So there, folks. Morning. But I was so excited to see Tony Wong, and everybody's just looking at me. This happened a bunch of times in Hong Kong, and they go, you know who that is? That's Tony Wong! Anyway, go on. Now that I've bragged a bit,
wow,
that was awesome. But yeah, could you distinguish the difference between the visual and storytelling styles of manga versus manhwa?
Oh, there's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
You tell them, man. Preach, baby.
I think, especially in those days, you know, and a little bit later when they changed when Tony Wong changed stuff to a more horizontal format, I've never seen comics like that before, where you can have entire issue, actually beyond that, several issues of a story, one long, continuous fight scene.
It's a scroll.
It really is. They stop every once in a while to talk, but everything is like,
bam.
They put their hands into a pose, and their hands start to catch on fire, whatever, which is really something that they learn. They'll have a flashback, and they'll go back, and they'll show them shift their feet, or whatever they're doing, and all these little subtleties and nuances,
yes,
of all the fight moves. The kick would start whirling around to a million little legs, you know, they're just what they showed, so you could see the direction of what his legs are doing. It's all very intricately choreographed. It must have been outrageous, but it was fun.
But
and they would go on for pages and pages.
It was the Jack Kirby at the time.
That's exactly it.
But, Ben, we have to do it funky comic book. Because what I loved about it is that they represented it, actual kung fu concepts and theories, right, but in a comic book milieu,
yeah,
in that it's all stance-based. You're gathering power, you're harnessing and directing your energy, mm-hmm, and they're able to do that. You've got it. And everybody's always, if they're going to do a martial art, even though they do Master of Kung Fu and Shang-Chi and Iron Fist, they're really doing martial art. They're not doing kung fu comics. They're doing martial art comics, even though these guys are supposed to be kung fu.
Right.
So we need to do a comic book where it's stance, it's that. It's
right,
stance-related.
Right.
And we can teach kung fu. We'll talk about that later. Anyway, so that's awesome. That's good. So how did things develop from there? Tell me more about, or we can go right into, we can cut to the chase and go right into your feelings of action today versus action yesterday and hopefully action tomorrow.
I could go to a lot of different things. I mean, one of the things I suppose that I'm known for is working on The Phantom Menace and working on the...
Sure. We're getting a photo, but we can continue talking during the photo. Just
okay.
When you're ready.
So,
do you want both of us or just Ben?
Both of you is fine.
All right.
If that's all right.
Oh, it's fine. It's all right with you? It's not too sure. Go ahead, Herb.
Good.
We interrupt this podcast for a special photo. Thank you. Yes, you were saying? Oh, yes. Calvin has hold on for it. And we'll take another pause. We're taking a pause now. Watch me take a pause. So as we were saying, I don't know what we were saying, but we'll go back to what... Oh, never mind. Yeah, what were we talking about? You remember?
Well, I think I was talking about... I was going to talk about my experience working on The Phantom Menace.
Oh, that's right.
That would, because most of what I'm known for is working on the Darth Maul sequence at the end and bringing a lot of the martial arts, Hong Kong martial arts aesthetic from what I could do into The Phantom Menace. I guess I was known as being sort of like the kind of martial arts connoisseur at ILM. So a lot of the reference that we used to look at to kind of get some of the ideas for some of the ideas or feeling of the fight scenes were from looking at my collection or stuff that I would rent from Chinatown to look at to just get a feel of it.
Yeah.
So we have...
Now, you might know this for a fact. Tai Seng told me that George Lucas asked them to come up and bring the Sammo Hung movie with a killer whale and Andy Lau.
The Moon Warriors?
Yeah, Moon Warriors, and show it at Lucasfilm before they started the prequels.
I don't know. I know that Moon Warriors is George Lucas's favorite Hong Kong
watch
film. That's what they told us, at least during the time when I was working on it.
Yeah. That's a pretty good corroboration.
Yes. So I that's all I know in terms of George's preferences of it. We looked at Once Upon a Time in China. The whole scaffold sequence was something that was sort of like, we should do something with a scaffold in it as well. I didn't really do much of that, but it'll be things like that that we just toss ideas around to sort of get the feel of it. They even asked me when they were originally looking for a stunt coordinator if I knew the names of any Hong Kong fight choreographers.
Yeah.
So I gave them Sammo's name,
right.
I gave them Ching Shu Dong's name,
yep.
Curry Yun, Jackie, of course.
All the good ones.
All the good, basically all the big names I gave them. But, in the end, they ended up getting a British guy.
Right.
Who's still a very talented guy, but at least they decided that they would take the effort to reach out.
So Also, Yuen Woo Ping.
Yuen Woo Ping,
of course. It's all the guys.
So basically, everybody who's anybody.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess got consideration. I don't know. I just supply the list of names. What they did with it, I have no idea, but I imagine they must use it for something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did. So do you still keep up with Asians, specifically Chinese cinema?
Not lately as much as I would like to. I get so busy, it's hard to watch. Find time to watch any movies, but I really wish that I could see a lot more. I don't know what's hot and what's not, but I do know what I like. And you know, that's why I depend on guys like you to say what's real. What are the ones that whenever I see, I say, okay, what's new? What should I see now? Because I know that my time in watching martial arts films is limited. I'm sure that Rick has seen them all lately, so he'd be a good recommendation.
Well, I'll send you the clips. You don't even have to watch the whole movie anymore.
Yeah.
Because nowadays all the fight scenes are individual,
right.
Just like American films.
Right.
You can basically take the fight scene out of the movie without affecting the movie in any way.
Yes, yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
But it's still the same. Sammo Hung,
right.
Stephen Tung Wai, the kid that Bruce was teaching in the beginning of Enter the Dragon.
Right.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Oh, Chin Far Lok is still in there punching.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, the show this year, the 20th anniversary of Kung Fu Extravaganza, had a nice mix of Kung Fu versus Gun Fu and War Fu.
Right.
A lot of War Fu in Chinese movies.
Right, right. I don't know. I don't care what it is as long as it's good. There's ways of making a martial arts film work and a way not to make it work. I think there's something online where a guy talks about how Jackie does Kung Fu comedy, and it's very, very, you know, it's actually really dead on in terms of what Jackie's doing right. You know, holding shots longer so you can see, you know, multiple parts of a stunt or fight sequence and not chopping, intercutting all the stuff into it. Keeping the camera wide so you can see the whole thing. Because your brain can only, you know, when you have all that much movement, can only process so much. And if you're, you know, when you cut and move closer or then cut wide or cut to a leg and to a foot, it takes your brain even a microsecond to reprocess that, and that takes you out of it. But if you're seeing the whole thing in a wide shot, it seems kind of counterintuitive. It's like, well, you're just holding the camera far away. No, for something like that, you kind of want to be far away and you want to keep the shot long so you can see the whole progress, not cut into it. You want to see the landing or the fall or whatever it is. You know, you need to see all those things in it.
Well, not only that, if you want to see a farcical example of the worst possible way, watch the latest Resident Evil movie.
Right.
They had four cuts per movement and different position. Not only would it cut, but it would cut to a different angle four times in one fist swing.
Right.
Incomprehensible. Hilariously bad.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it is these cut type of things sort of became what they are because usually you're working with people who, one, don't necessarily have martial arts skills, and two, they don't necessarily want to shoot the thing over and over again to perfection the way Jackie would.
But the magic of digital
these days, you get your stuntman and digitally put his head on there. I think, you know, why not then shoot it? But keep the original performance in there.
Yeah. And also the big thing that's happening today is all the producers are saying, well, the kids want MMA, so that's all we're going to do.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Even Forbidden Kingdom with Jackie and Jet, choreographed by Yuen Woo Ping, there's not a nanosecond of actual kung fu in it.
Right, right, right.
It's all straight punches, straight kicks, anger-driven, anger and muscle-driven.
I mean, I think there's difference between the movie fighting and there's different and real fighting.
Of course.
And real fighting, you know, It doesn't necessarily look better on film. It might look a real fight actually can look kind of boring on film.
Yep.
And so that's where these stylizations come from.
It's also too short. Real fights.
They're too short. Yeah. Sometimes you can't see it because you do have to kind of fake a big wind up. I mean, Bruce Lee would always talk about non-telegraphic, being non-telegraphic in your punches and stuff like that, which is true in a real fight.
Yeah.
But in a movie, your brain needs a little bit of time to process it, so you do have the wind up. So when you see Bruce do stuff in his movies, he did lots of stuff that he would never do in a real fight,
right,
because he knew it looked good for the camera.
Right.
It wouldn't work in a real fight, but it looked good for the camera, and he knew that difference.
Yeah, all of them did. Sammo does, Jackie does. Although Sammo stuff can get, you watch his editing, you watch his camera work, he's able to encapsulate brutality in a very, very nice way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but these guys were like, people complain that there's not enough of Jackie and Jet anymore, and I'm saying, well, there's no Fred Astaire or Gene Kelly either.
Right.
There's
right.
no Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton.
It is amazing, though, just the fact that at Jackie's age, we still get anything at all. And a lot of those guys, I mean, I guess, despite all the beating up their bodies take, they're still pretty healthy. I mean,
but they've no kung fu.
I mean, come on, look at Yuen Hua. He's still doing great stuff and kung fu hustle, things like that, what's her name? The landlady.
Oh yes, the landlady. Well, Michelle Yeoh, but that's not the landlady.
No, no,
yeah, I know
no,
the landlady. But she's only done two movies.
But she was part of the Peking Opera School with them, so she has that training,
right,
and so she can still do stuff.
That's right. And Sammo, the only reason that Sammo's so damaged is that he did real fights in addition to movie fights.
Yeah.
Jumping
out of a building and stuff has a little bit to do with it.
He lets Yuen Biu do that.
He doesn't
fall out of the building.
But they are pretty amazing physical specimens.
They are indeed. I mean, Sammo's still working.
Yeah.
And as I said in my show, Sammo choreographs every fight scene now like it's his last.
Yes.
Because it might be. He told me the story that he was in Ip Man 2 and he had to go to the hospital and get 2 to 3 stents in his heart.
Wow.
He was back to the set in 3 weeks?
Wow.
6 weeks?
That's amazing.
Yeah, he is indomitable considering the weight he carries around with him.
Yeah.
But Jackie's also great. I showed the latest Jackie. Jackie did 3 movies last year.
Yeah.
And he's all different types.
How old is he now? Is it Jackie?
He's 1 year younger than me, so he's 60. He's 63 or 62. He changes. His birthday's in April. Mine is in August.
Yeah.
So I'm turning 64. So I guess in April he turned 62.
It's pretty amazing.
Really amazing.
I wish I could kick like that. But I wish I could do that now, whatever he does.
We'll teach you.
And I'm 10 years younger than him.
You can do it in artwork, though. You can do it on the paper.
Yeah, I guess that hurts a lot less.
I hope so. Well, anything else? I mean, this has been awesome. We can talk about this stuff forever.
You know that I can talk about this forever, and I don't even talk that much. But yeah, sure. But
what else do you want to say? Let's talk about other stuff. No? We're in the middle of the floor. If I think of something, I'll give you a call back.
Okay.
And we'll do it. But thank you, Ben. By the way, I have a sign-off. Every single episode, we do a sign-off. And my sign-off is, and you can join me, my sign-off is, use your blinkers, jackass.
Okay.
So I'll count to 3, and we can both do it. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Use your blinkers, jackass!
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more Film Fun, Frenzy, and Friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
Solid victory.